great to be here. That worship was fantastic. I think you compete with the people in the dome. I'd like to share with you a bit of my story as an international student. You got part of that in what I was sharing, but I'll go more in detail. When I escaped from Egypt during the socialization period, and I lived with my grandparents, very shortly after that my grandfather died, and I was alone in Montreal. I was 16 years old. I had to figure out how to wind down his two businesses that were bankrupt, and my parents were stuck in Europe with the Canadian government not allowing them to come to Canada. So it was a very frightening time. And during that time, a Christian family reached out to me, took me to church, talked to me about Jesus, and as I said a few days ago, I came to know the Lord through the love and witness of Christian students in Montreal. I was discipled through the InterVarsity group at McGill University. It was exciting to learn my faith from other students, rather than to learn it from professional Christians. And I think I was challenged when I saw students excited for Jesus, because it made me feel I could be excited for Jesus. I could do something as well. I fell in love and married a young Haitian gal. She doesn't look Haitian, but she was born and raised in Haiti. Of missionary parents. So, and Rebecca had always wanted to be a missionary overseas, but there was a problem. At that time, I had felt God's call to go back to Egypt, but Egypt and America were enemies. We did not even have an American and embassy in Egypt. So I told her, there's no way I can marry an enemy. So we found a quick solution. She became Canadian. And when we moved to Egypt, she became Egyptian. So I tell her she married me for my citizenships. One of the most special things of our ministry was working with French-Canadian students in Montreal. They were exciting times. We loved working in French Canada. We loved seeing what God was doing in that province. And it was very difficult to think of leaving all this after 18 years and going back to Egypt. But since the day I had come to know the Lord in the summer of 1962, I felt God had called me to go back to Egypt. And I felt my time in Canada, and I then studied in the United States, was a training, an equipping, a preparation for going back to Egypt. And that's where I want to challenge you. Some of you may not think of a possibility of going back to your countries. But I want you to think of your time in North America, whether you stay or whether you go back, as a time of preparation and equipping. It took me 18 years. And many people said, after 18 years of living in North America, how can you go back? You've settled so much. But God needed these 18 years to prepare me for the mission He had for me in Egypt after that. The background of a story I want to use tonight is that of Joseph. The story of Joseph in the Old Testament is one of the most exciting stories. It takes a lot of chapters. And I'm just going to summarize it. I won't take time to read the text tonight. He was a spoiled boy, the favorite of his father. His brothers didn't like him. They sold him to Egypt, to traders coming to Egypt as a slave, and told his father that he had died. He worked as a slave in a house in Egypt, and seemed to have done so well that the man he was working for, Potiphar, made him in charge of all his household. But then Potiphar's wife made a pass at him, and when he refused her sexual advances, she accused him of trying to rape her, and he found himself unjustly put in prison. Instead of being mad at God, he was faithful in prison, so much so that the guard in the prison put him in charge of a whole prison. And at that time, he interpreted two dreams of two men who were prisoners, and the dreams came true. One was put to death, and the other was liberated. And when the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, had a dream, the man who had been liberated, who was the high official with Pharaoh, told Pharaoh, when I was in prison, there was this man who interpreted my dream, and they came true. So Pharaoh got Joseph, and Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dream, and the dream was that Egypt would be facing 7 years of plenty, and then 7 years of famine. Pharaoh believed him, made him responsible for Egypt, the number two man in Egypt, and he began storing up for the years of famine during the years of plenty. So when the famine came, Egypt wasn't affected, and eventually people came to Egypt to get food. His family members came, and there he had the struggle of what does he do with the brothers who sold him into slavery? Does he revenge? Does he get back at them? Or what does he do? Anyway, God works in his heart. He forgives them, and they move into Egypt and live in Egypt with him and his family, and he protects them. So having gone to Egypt, having been sold as a slave, becomes a way God uses to save his family from death. As Joseph looks back at his life, he tells his brothers, "You intended it for evil, but God intended it for good. When I left Egypt and my family lost all their possessions, it seemed as though it was evil. It seemed as though it was completely wrong. But I firmly believe today that God forcing me to leave Egypt and come to Canada was his intention for good, so that someday I could go back and be a blessing to my people in Egypt." Now Joseph's wife, the king had him marry, a very important, from a very good family, was a daughter of the priest of On. And On is a city just close to where we live, Heliopolis. So that's close to us. And his life demonstrates to us how an alien, someone is a foreigner, can live in a foreign country. Joseph was a God-fearing man living in a pagan country, and he had many challenges. Like you, he was living in a foreign country. Like you, and those of you here all seem to know the Lord and love the Lord, he wanted to serve his God. Like you, he wondered how he could be an effective witness. And he did not know that he was preparing for a future, but you are preparing for a future. And maybe your future is in North America, but just possibly, your future, like mine, may be to go back. So I'm addressing today, particularly those of you who may believe that God is preparing you to go back and be a blessing to the countries from which you came. You, like me, may have escaped for economic, political, social, and other reasons. But I want to challenge you today to think of God's call to go back. One of the reasons I went back, because I went to Urbana conferences, I went to other missionary conferences, and I realized that it's very stupid for Americans to have to learn Arabic and then to spend so many years learning it to try to communicate when I knew the language. It's very stupid to think of having to learn all the cultures. So my friends were preparing to go as missionaries to the Middle East, and I was sitting here in Canada. It didn't make sense. It was much more logical that I would go back. And it's more economical, simpler, and easier. So I began thinking, you know, I had the call, but it was confirmed that I began seeing it doesn't make sense for me to stay here when the gospel is needed in the Muslim world and when I can do something to do it. So I'm wanting to address those of you whom God may be calling today to go back. Now it may take a long time. It took me 18 years. God wants the best for missionaries, and it may take you 18 years to be the best missionary that he can equip as you go back. So if you are preparing, I want to give you some insights. Now God could have done different things with Joseph in Egypt. It wasn't very effective of God to have him be a slave in Egypt and then a prisoner. A better idea, like Oscar said yesterday, if I were God, would have been to give Joseph miraculous gifts so that he would impress the Egyptians. God did that, do that with Moses. He could have sent him on a preaching tour of Egypt. He could have had big evangelistic campaigns like Jonah did, and the people would have been converted. And God would have used him to evangelize Egypt. He could have had him build a temple, like Solomon did, and compete with the Egyptian temples. Egypt has a lot of temples, and they were very excited about their temples. He could have made him build a temple like Solomon did. But God didn't. God allowed Joseph to suffer and to be oppressed and to get to know Egypt from the inside out. Now, what kind of man was Joseph? He was faithful in any task assigned to him by his boss, whether it was Potiphar in that household where he was, whether it was a jailer, or later Pharaoh. Are you being faithful in what you're doing now? Are you a faithful student? And if you're not a student, if you're working, are you faithful in your work? And if you're a student and you're working, are you faithful? God wants you to be faithful in what you're doing now, and He's going to teach you lessons through that. Even if it may seem boring. It must have been very tedious, boring, and annoying to come from being the favored son, who probably didn't have to do much work and had many servants to take care of him, to be a slave in the house of Potiphar. And then once he got to that important position in that household, to then have to go to jail must have been very humiliating. But God had His reason. Secondly, not only was he a man who was faithful, he was a man of principles. He resisted very strong sexual temptation. He resisted a woman offering herself to him and offering him protection. Now, many of you have come from countries where things are more restricted, where sex is not being made available as easy as it is in the West. And it's a big challenge to resist the sexual temptations of the West. And unfortunately, many people coming from countries like ours, when they come to the West, fall sexually. I think there's a message in Joseph to say, stick to your principles. Beware of Satan's attack. And then he resisted something else. He resisted revenge on his brothers. And many people who, like myself, leave a country because your family has been nationalized, because they are oppressed, hate their countries. They're very angry at their countries. And they're very happy to say how awful and how restrictive their home country is. They don't have Jesus' love for their country. Joseph loved his family and he resisted to take revenge on his brothers. What is your heart attitude? Are you angry at the countries you come from? Is that anger also a pretext for you to stay in Canada or the United States? Some people who feel a bit guilty that they're not going back and serving their countries talk badly about their countries to justify the fact that they're here in the West. And it's a very dangerous excuse, many of us. And that's why sometimes you don't often hear people talking good things about, let's say, a country like Egypt, where I come from. There are very good things. Rebecca and I raised our children in Egypt. It's a much safer place to raise children. It's much better in a place where, if I go to a hotel with a woman, I have to prove she's my wife. I have to show the documents that she's my wife, or they will not give me a hotel room in Egypt. I like that. The government protects me. They don't just tell you to put a seatbelt. You have to wear seatbelts like they do here. They also say, we want to protect you morally. And we want to put structures in to protect you. Some people resent that. They say they restrict my freedom. But I like that. Our children never face the question of same-sex marriage because it's inconceivable in our country. Marriage is between a man and a woman, and that's it, point blank. And I like it that way. It's easier. And it's better to raise your family. So there are many, many advantages. The other night, my daughter was visiting with us. She went back home at night with her two children. I think it was past midnight. And my wife and I were saying, we're not worried. She's going home on her own in a car in a city of 20 million with our two grandkids at midnight, and we're not worried. It's safe. Yes, there are some incidents, but they're very rare and not common. So there are many advantages in the countries we come from. And let's not just talk about the disadvantages. You can look at the half-empty glass or the half-full glass. The half that's empty or the half that's full. Let's look at the half that's full. Now, how did God prepare and shape Joseph for his mission? He prepared him through difficulties. Joseph came from a dysfunctional family. His brothers did not get along with each other. They didn't get along with their father. And his father favored him. There was a lot of family tension. So much so that when he had his first son, he called him Manasseh. Nasa means forget in Hebrew. He said, it is because God made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. He wanted to forget his bad, dysfunctional family. He also had problematic gifts. His early dreams got him into trouble at home. He dreamed things about his brothers and he got very jealous. So what seemed to be a gift, at least in his situation with his brothers, got him into a lot of trouble. And he was also the victim of favoritism. His father's favoritism to him got him into trouble. But it also helped him to be groomed by Jacob in business matters. He was probably trained by his father to be his heir. And he learned a lot. In life as a slave, Joseph learned the principles of Egyptian administration from his boss Potiphar. He wouldn't have been able to manage Egypt later on if he hadn't managed the household of Potiphar. So that training, that work within that household, made him understand how to do these things in an Egyptian, Egyptian way. And then in jail, he probably learned how enemies of the state operate, so that when he was in charge of Egypt, he probably knew how the other side works and could foil their attempts. Maybe we should have people in the CIA and in the FBI who have been in jail for a while, so that they would know how to handle some of our terrorists who seem to evade them and elude them and all the things you've seen on TV. You maybe haven't watched TV the last 2 days, but there's a lot of talk about how the system, the whole system here in America, has many holes in it. Maybe it's because those running it have never been in jail like Joseph. Anyway, so my question to you is, how is God using what you are going through to prepare you for your future? You may not know, but you need to trust Him. Let me give you an example. When I was a poor student in Canada, I was desperate. My first summer in Canada, I was desperate for a job. I wanted to do anything because my father came as a dentist. They wouldn't accept his credentials, so he had to go to school. So father and son were in school at McGill University, and the bills were piling up. So summer, I had to raise make enough money to pay for my tuition. So I asked for a summer job. I looked around, and I got this very strange job. Very strange job. I became the pastor of a home, a summer home for underprivileged mothers and their children. Now, I was 17 years old. And you ask, how did you become a pastor? I had become a Christian through my church, my local church. And it was a very open-minded church. And the week before I went for my interview for this job, my church had allowed me to preach. First sermon I ever preached in my life at 17. So when I went for the interview, and they said, you're applying to be the pastor of this place, do you know how to preach? They said, oh yeah, I was preaching last Sunday at church. I didn't tell them it was my first sermon. I got the job. And here I was. I had to do two things. Run the office for that camp in the daytime, and in the evening go and be the pastor to about 50 women, French-Canadian women, and 200 children or something. Now, I learned the hard way. I didn't even understand the problems they came to me with. And I had to say, yes, yes, yes. I didn't even know what they were talking about. But I learned a lot. I had come from a very rich family. I knew nothing about poverty. I knew nothing about poor people. I knew nothing about people in need. And through listening and working in these summer jobs, I was studying physics at McGill, but listening, I became sensitized to the needs of the poor, to the needs of people. I began to understand a completely new dimension of life. So what was a summer job to make some money? Taught me a lot. And I learned also how to lead as a Christian. I had to lead chapel services for these women, and I had to teach myself how to do it, because I didn't know what to do. When we moved to Egypt, we moved in a very dilapidated apartment, an apartment that was falling down, very bad shape. So most of my time when I first moved back to Egypt, that was in the 1980s, I was doing fixing my apartment. Had to do a wiring, had to do some plastering, had to do some plumbing. It was a lot of fixing. So much so that when my daughter was asked at school, what was it does your daddy do? What's his profession? She says he fixes our apartment. And then, but when many years later, I became the director of the Bible Society of Egypt, we bought properties, opened bookshops, and renovated things. I then knew how to deal with Egyptian labor. I knew how much things cost. I knew a lot of things that I would never have known if I had not lived in a very dilapidated apartment, an apartment that needed a lot of repair. So what I felt may have been a waste of time in my early years in Egypt was an extremely useful training to what I did later at the Bible Society. Also, the apartment we were in, unfortunately, the building was bought by a ruthless businessman, and he began evicting people, kicking them out, and he sued the lady who was renting to us, and we were being threatened to be kicked out of the apartment. So I spent a lot of my time in court. Now you think that's again, I'm coming to Egypt to do student work, what are you doing going to court once a week with a lawyer and fighting to remain in that apartment? But also, these many years of working with that lawyer helped me when I took over the Bible Society, because we faced a lot of legal restrictions and problems, and I was knowledgeable in Egyptian law. I knew how to handle court cases. I wasn't afraid of eviction orders or other such things, subpoenas and other things which we get at the Bible Society. So things that seemed bad, things that seemed like a waste of time, became essential for me to the calling God have called me to. And then, through my work with students, as a student worker, I made a lot of friends. I got to know a lot of students. Some of these students today are in leadership in the country and in the church, and they now help me. They now open doors for me. All these contacts have been very useful for me to the place God has called me. So what did God do with Joseph? We said he let him have such a difficult time as a slave and in jail. He made him a government official. He put him in charge of the political system in Egypt. He made him specialize in agricultural reform. That was economics. He taught him warehousing skills, principles of management. He made him a national leader, an administrator. And he ended up by controlling the fate of the nation. Now that was not the vision you would have of someone serving God. Politics, economics, management, administration, ruling. You'd think God would have wanted to do him to do something more spiritual. But maybe God is equipping you to take leadership in your countries. Maybe God is preparing you because these countries need honest leaders. They need leaders who have principles. And maybe God is preparing you for this. Each of the tasks that God gave to Joseph when he was ruler of Egypt were based on training he had through the difficult times in his time in Egypt or even in his own family. But Joseph didn't know that until later. So what I want to tell you is everything you are going through today, you may be having difficulties at university, you may be having difficulties in the place you're living, you may be having difficulties with your roommates, you may be having difficulties with your job. Each one of these may be part of God's plan to equip you, to prepare you, to shape you for something that will then appear useful 10, 15, 20 years later. So, what's my advice? My advice is for you to let God use you where you are. Don't wait till the future. Don't wait till some future time and say, oh, when I graduate, when I finish, when I do. One of the big advantages of this international student ministry is the encouragement for you to be a witness now. And it was so moving to hear these testimonies today of some of you who are being witnesses today to people around you. But also, as I said, God can use every experience you go through, good or bad, in equipping you for future service if you cooperate with Him. So when you're going through these situations, those difficult situations, say, God, why are you letting me go through this? What do you want me to learn from this difficult situation? And then do not wait for the ideal opportunity. Allow Him to work through you now. As I said, use every opportunity to equip. You are now investing in your future. So first of all, learn all you can. Anything you can learn while you're young, learn it. Any skill you think you can, whether it's whatever. And acquire as many skills as possible. Learn to work with your hands, as Americans and Canadians do. Don't despise practical skills like as plumbing, electrical work, painting. You'll never get that training in your home countries. In our countries, we hire people to do that. We don't do it ourselves. We don't paint our own walls. We don't do our own plumbing. We don't do our own electrical work. Canadians and Americans do that, and you can learn that now. And someday, it may be extremely useful for you. It was for me when I was renovating that apartment in Egypt. Build all the relationships you can. A broad network of relationships that you have now here in North America would be very useful when you go back to your country. Also learn about marriage and parenthood principles here. In many of our countries, marriage and parenthood are taken for granted. You don't have courses. You don't have things to teach you. So even if you're young, even if you're not married, read some books on marriage. Prepare yourself for marriage and parenthood, because in the countries you come from, you probably will not find that training. And someday God may use you to provide that kind of training. North Americans are very good in preparing themselves for these things, and the Christian church is very equipped in that area. And now that globalization is bringing in wrong values to many of our countries, we see the breakdown of the family, we see the loss of real parenthood, and people are floundering. You may be used that way. Try to be infected by the efficiency and creativity of the West. There is a real sense of efficiency and creativity here in the West. People are creative and people are efficient, and in many of our countries, except for those of you from Southeast Asia where we're very efficient, but those of you from Africa, from Latin America, will find that we're not very efficient. From Haiti. Learn to be infected by this efficiency and creativity. It will be very good for you in the future. In short, get the best of the West while you're here, and try to avoid the evils. Now, the final outcome was that Joel saved and blessed his family. If he had not been faithful, his family and his people would have been wiped out, and there would have been no Jacobites, no Israel anymore. Maybe God has brought you here to save your family, to save your people, and not just necessarily to get them a visa to America or Canada, but to go back and do something for thousands and millions. Every week, Rebecca and I pray that Haitians in Montreal will think of going back to Haiti to serve their people. Why should American missionaries and Canadian missionaries go to Haiti when Haitians who speak the language, have the right color and understand, don't do that? So I challenge those of you to think seriously of maybe the fact that God brought you here to equip you to go back, and not to just leave you here forever enjoying the land of Canaan and all its fruit. God is equipping you now to serve and bless your family, your national church, and your nation. Don't say no. Thank you.